That's our music for the Aging Well Together show, so we get to get started. Thank you so much for joining us. I am so looking forward to today's show. We have been planning this for months. First of all, it is June, and I should have said this last week, but it is Alzheimer's and Brain Health Awareness Month, and that's sort of been perfect, as for the last few shows, we've been talking all about different brain health and dementia resources and caregiver resources, and today the show is going to be all about strokes and aphasia, and we'll talk about what that means. We have Dr. Heidi Roth, a neurologist, and lots of other impressive titles from UNC. And we have my longtime friend and colleague, who I just realized is has his PhD. So I knew him as Jeff for many years, but we have Dr. Jeff Charles, who will share his journey after experiencing multiple strokes and living with aphasia. So we will get all into that. I'm excited for all we will learn together. But before we dive into our show, as always, I want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 FM for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. And also, as always, give so much love because the Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the tremendously helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. As you know, you get to join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. You can catch us live every Thursday from 2 to 3 on 103.5 FM, or you can stream us live through WCOMFM.org, or you can listen to any of our previous shows, aka our podcasts, through the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is www.orangecountync.gov/aging. Again, www.orangecountync.gov/aging. On the website, you can find links to our Aging Well Together show, our radio show, as well as a host of other helpful resources about services in Orange County, North Carolina. I add that now since I understand we have listeners throughout the country, and we even have some international listeners, for those of you who remember our great song that a songwriter in Britain sent us. So anyway, we are in Orange County, North Carolina. If you have questions about any of the resources we discuss on the show, or if you want to suggest a topic for an upcoming show, you can either call the Department on Aging, and this is where I pause for you all to get your pencil and pens and paper. You can call the Department on Aging at 919-968-2070, or feel free to email me directly at one long word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. All smushed together, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. And a shout out, as always, to the Robert Bradford Quartet for allowing us to use their great music for our opening and closing music. You heard just a moment of it, but you'll hear more at the end. And I'm thrilled, my fabulous co-host, who somehow is in here but not in front of the microphone, Alicia. What are you doing? Here's your chair, love. What are you doing? She is like, back. Unless you didn't, are you not joining us today?
Well, there's a lot of people.
Well, no, Linda's in the, we've got an audience here. It's really except, but no, there's your space. All right.
She's talking to, she does this to me.
I do. It's live radio. Alicia Reed is here, just got here from doing some sort of fantastic instruction over at one of our senior centers, or the Sportsplex, as you all hear. Alicia is the incomparable wellness instructor, and she's always running somewhere. And yeah, you're in the really short
chair. I'm her Ed
chair.
McMahon.
I told them that beforehand. I said, she's my Ed McMahon.
I'm going to get her for that.
Alicia, it's good. And for those of you who, Alicia, I'm not sure if you'll get to, I think you and I are going to try to be quiet a lot of the show.
I hope.
Shock.
I want to hear her. Shocker.
But
it won't happen.
I know, right? We always say that famous last words, we won't talk a lot. But at 3 o'clock, you have afternoon talk with Alicia, so you can listen to a lot more. And I think last week, I photobombed your show for a while. Was it last week? I was busy chatting on her the week before, so Yeah, we call each other out. All right, so for me, my last moment, and then I'll take a break talking from talking. Ha ha, famous last words. I'm Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. And I'm a caregiver for older family members. And at 53, I get to say, for just a few more months, I'm focused on my own changing needs. I think it is the time in the show, as we've been doing the last few weeks, to complain about how hot it is in here. I'm a middle-aged woman, and I am very hot in this studio. I am super invested, clearly, in my own changing needs and all of our changing needs as we are aging well together. And I'm particularly interested in strokes and aphasia. So I am absolutely excited. Oh, yeah. Alicia's putting the fan on. I'm excited for our guest today. I really want to turn it over. We have two powerful advocates in the aging and brain health and aphasia space. We have Dr. Heidi Roth. I mentioned her titles. I had fun looking. She's a, is it okay that I call you a neurologist? Is that a fair physician, neurologist? You had all kinds of cool things. Division chief and professor in UNC neurology with clinical interests in aging and the diagnosis and treatment of sleep disorders. If we have time today, I want to chat about that. If not, we're going to do a whole show on sleep issues. I'm warning you now. Dr. Roth is like a new friend of mine. She's just met me like 15 minutes ago, and already I'm booking another show for her. So we want to, she's just knows so much about sleep disorders, dementia, and memory loss, as well as language disorders, including aphasia. And we knew we would love to have the clinical perspective. So, so excited that Dr. Roth is here. She also is a co-investigator with the Center for Aphasia and Related Disorders. So we have her here because we also have my longtime colleague, Dr. Jeff Charles. I figured out he's a doctor because I did some stalking for him. Jeff is going to share his own personal experiences with strokes and aphasia. I've known Jeff for years now as we serve together on the Orange County Advisory Board on Aging, who blessed this show, who actually Jeff was part of the group that helped to name this show. Oh. So it's good to be back together. So he knew about it when it was just a little inkling of an idea, a little baby idea to have a radio show. Dr. Charles is also on the Duke Patient Family Advisory Council for Neurology. He's also on the board of directors of the Triangle Aphasia Project. So we have a lot to learn from both of you. So welcome to both of you.
Welcome.
Yeah. You could say hi.
Thank
Sorry.
You. It's nice to be here.
Great. So we talked about it, and while we're going to at some point turn it over to Dr. Roth to get the clinical perspective, we really thought it would be helpful to start with understanding the personal journey and literally hearing about Jeff's experience. So, Jeff, tell us about you.
Yeah, I'm very excited to be here. I do want to know, to let you know, that there is a good life after a stroke. Mm-hmm. And that's very important to me, and that's why I'm here. And along to that, I have aphasia, but everything that I'm talking to you is being created immediately from my damaged brain mm-hmm. that has gotten better. Mm-hmm. So I had a stroke 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. I had basically blood poisoning that caused bacteria growth on a heart valve that broke wow. off and caused my stroke on the right side of my brain. Mm-hmm. It turns out from the first stroke I had as a kid, which we go into later, mm-hmm. it turned out that my speech center developed on the right side of my brain instead of the left. So I am a little unusual in that I had a right side stroke and I have aphasia.
Well, and so I feel like we should start from the beginning about, for our listeners, and maybe Dr. Roth, this might be a time to jump in, or whichever of you, how do we define what a stroke is? Because our listeners may be curious. I'm always curious about what exactly is a stroke.
Yeah, that everything's a loaded question.
I know, and we didn't even get to say welcome, but, right. Dr. Roth. I usually ask the two of you, tell us about where you're from and
right.
how you got
that's
interested,
good.
But
that's
feel
good.
Free to.
Because I think there are different kinds of strokes, and it does get confusing. one type of stroke you can have is a hemorrhage, mm-hmm. bleeding type of stroke, where the blood vessel might burst in the brain, and because the blood comes out, it can cause damage to the surrounding structures, and then that leads to that area of the brain not functioning well. Mm-hmm. But as the blood is absorbed, some of that function can come back. But that's called a stroke too, because it has something to do with the blood vessel and losing the blood. The other type of stroke, which we often, more often might be thinking about, is when there's not, the blood vessel loses blood flow. And so that's called an ischemic stroke, not a bleeding stroke.
Oh, those are fancy words that I've heard, or I was an avid ER watcher. Everything I know I learned from television, sorry.
Right.
Okay.
And we have, I just actually was at a talk just an hour ago. About 25% of people at least have strokes, but many of the strokes, 90% of them are silent, that we're not aware of them. So it really depends on, what kind of way you want to define things. But if you take a brain scan and you look at somebody's brain, you might see little strokes, tiny little, you could call them strokes, but they're not symptomatic. And how important are those? We don't know. It's the bigger strokes, I think, that are important to focus on. And the bigger strokes would be that kind of stroke where you have a blockage in the blood vessel. Mm-hmm. And the brain is very sensitive to loss of oxygen, mm-hmm. and nutrients to keep going. And that's why, just like the heart, maybe even more sensitive. So that's why when people start to have symptoms suddenly, it's so important to get in to be evaluated right away now,
because
they can put in those clot busting medications to unblock the blockage that can lead to a stroke.
I'm already jumping in with questions.
Yeah.
Is this where people say take
general.
The... No, I love this.
Yeah.
Is this where people say, if you start to feel something, take a baby aspirin or an aspirin? Do they still say
no,
to do that?
No, not with the stroke.
See,
you just want to head in.
Okay, listeners, ignore that I just said that. Strike this from the transcript. Okay.
Maybe, with heart disease, people might be saying that.
See,
but
I get these confused.
I don't know about the recommendation for heart disease, but with stroke, it could be that you had a bleeding stroke, right? And if you had a bleeding stroke, you don't want to take aspirin, which increases your bleeding.
Okay, so don't take
risk.
That, people. I didn't even say that. I shouldn't say anything.
I don't think that would be.
Is there anything that
microphone, my love?
Is there anything,
yeah.
I can hear you. Is there anything prior to, like, you can with heart attacks that they know that we could take?
I think the main thing would be to get to an emergency room for evaluation as quickly as possible. It's like they talk about it as brain attack, like. Your brain, time is brain. Mm-hmm. Time is brain. So the faster you get there, don't take your car, call an ambulance.
Don't lay down and rest. Yeah. And
laying down while you're waiting is fine, because that can help get the blood flow to the parts of the brain.
But
there's
call.
No self-medic, nothing
no,
we can
the
do.
The fastest you can get
to. Get to
yeah,
okay.
evaluation
it,
the
it
best.
Is, they've done studies on mm-hmm. this, and they actually are saying that every minute of delay, you lose about 1 million brain cells.
So speed is of the essence. And if you want to do anything, lying down might be better, just because the blood goes to your brain when you lie down.
Interesting. I had a friend who had a traumatic brain injury. She fell and hit her head. And so I knew it was a traumatic brain injury, but some of her... when I talked to some clinical friends as she recovered, and they used the term stroke with her, and they said it's, I don't know if they were saying it was a stroke or it's kind of like a stroke. Is that, can you bring it on like that? Or
In my experience, for a specific reason, I'm on blood thinners. And so they always say, if I fall and hit my head, I am going to have a bleed. And the doctor has already explained that blood can cause damage. So if people fall, they can have a brain injury from a fall.
So we've defined, because I think where we're going. So we've just kind of talked about what a stroke is, and if I'm saying it back right, so there's two different ways that kind of the bleeding, the hemorrhaging stroke, or because of a blockage, that fancier.
And the last one I would just add is that when I see people in the clinic, they're often concerned that they had a stroke because somebody looked at the MRI, the brain MRI, the picture of their brain, and they said, oh, look, there's a lot of little strokes. Those aren't always strokes. They're small, little, tiny vascular changes. But
it's
people get confused.
I've heard some of them are the TIA word that I hear sometimes.
Now that's a different thing.
I'm going to stop saying medical stuff.
But TIA, I've heard mini stroke.
That's another thing that gets confusing. But a TIA is more like if you have a symptom like Jeff was talking about, where you get aphasia, but it goes away after a few minutes. Typically, it's only like a minute or two. It means that there's like maybe a blockage that happened, but you cleared it on its own, and so it kind of cleared out, and now the brain is functioning again.
Is that forever?
So it's a transient ischemic attack. Transient means temporary.
Oh, that's the TIA. Okay.
The TIA, temporary. If you think about transient, temporary. So if the symptoms are getting better very quickly, it could be a temporary thing, but it's a warning because it may be that you're going to get more of a permanent one later and you want to get on the right medicine. So TIAs are very important to get evaluated for.
So if I had that and I just thought I'm just going to go lay down, I would not go to the hospital because of that.
You would do that. You want to get evaluated for sure. If you ever have, you know, suddenly can't move your right arm, but it goes away, that's an important warning sign that you might be getting a stroke come a couple hours from that time. Hmm. So you do want to get seen for those temporary transient. Hmm. It's like a warning attack when people are having angina in their heart, where they're getting chest pressure and chest pain. They might not yet have gotten a heart attack, but it's a warning that they might be getting a heart attack. They need to get that blockage unblocked before they have the heart attack.
So don't ignore...
Don't ignore
if your body's talking to you, listen to it. I'm so nervous now to say anything medical because I'm going to keep messing it up. Isn't there like the warning signs FAST or something?
Yes.
All right. What does FAST, Jeff, stand for?
The first one is your face. Mm-hmm. If you notice a drooping, the other one I think is movement or balance. If you sense any of these, it may be a warning sign that you're having a stroke and you need, as I explained, get to the hospital very quickly. Mm-hmm. Both Duke and UNC have special programs to get possible stroke patients seen quickly. You go to the emergency room, you say you're having potentially a stroke, they're going to work really fast because part of FAST, one of the term T is time.
Oh, okay.
Timing is the most important thing if you're thinking you have a stroke.
Okay. Because I remember hearing the, what's it called, an acronym? Is that what FAST is? But yes. I don't remember what it stands for. So clearly I only got half the education. So it's, is it FAST?
I don't actually, off the top of my head, have the
acronym.
We
do this all the time with guests. We ask them random questions and then poor things have to look on their phones.
Well, they have them all ready.
F is for face. And probably leg is one of them, I would guess, or limb.
Okay, well, that's all right. I'll look. Oh, my goodness. This is so fun.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, never mind. Clearly, it's not a big... The issue is...
This is for marketing, for informing people. It's really important.
Yes.
That they get there quickly. And this is maybe a way to remember it. FAST means face drooping, arm weakness, speech difficulty, and time to call.
Okay. All right. There we go. So those are all the things that Jeff put together. But that's what face, arm, speech, time.
Time. Yep.
All right. Yep. Listen to your body, listeners. Speaking of listening to differences, let's talk about what aphasia means. It's a term that I'd heard for years, but I didn't quite know what it meant. Jeff, you may have been my first friend. They're pointing at who's going to answer this. Jeff, you're my first friend with aphasia. I've got family members that had it, but I wasn't quite aware of what it is. Dr. Heidi Roth, how would you define aphasia for our listeners?
I would define it as any type of acquired language change related to some type of structural change in the brain. People do have language disorders that are developmental, but we don't usually typically call those aphasia. But the key thing is to understand that there are so many different components of language, mm-hmm. and aphasia can affect different aspects of speech and comprehension and a lot of different things related to language that are different. So every person with aphasia can be different. I guess that would be my one point to make, though there are certain things to know. One of them is that I would just want to put out there, because I work a lot with people with aphasia, not only in the context of stroke, because I'm not an acute stroke doctor, but also in the context of dementia or early signs of changing cognitive problems. And you probably know that people have trouble finding words sometimes mm-hmm. when you get older. And some people actually develop very specific problems with speech and language. And that's what we call primary progressive aphasia. So it's a different, it's an aphasia related to
their dementia,
a type of
brain
a dementia.
Change, not
yeah.
a stroke necessarily. I thought it's
yeah,
so funny.
But for both cases, it's similar in that people are presented with the same clinical symptoms. And that's the most important thing for a person, really, is to know how to navigate their life with these symptoms. So you can have aphasia from a stroke, mm-hmm. or you can have aphasia from a very specific type of cognitive change mm-hmm. that could be related to a dementia. Even though people with that don't have dementia, like mm-hmm. we think about, they can't remember things. Mm-hmm. They have whatever their dementia is, it's just a language problem. So you have to remember that they don't have the other mm-hmm. things. And people
and
get
people
confused.
People can misunderstand yeah. it. They'll hear a different way of speaking and then assume that
they have dementia.
Cognitively.
Yeah.
Jeff, you're giving me the wave. Talk to me.
No,
and I had a question for you.
I want to make 2 points about mm-hmm. aphasia from a scientific statement. Aphasia does not indicate any change in intelligence
yes.
at all. Stroke, you can lose intelligence. But aphasia, if you have aphasia, it does not comment about your intelligence at all. A good picture. Think about the connection between the brain and the tongue. So think of a picture of a brain and a tongue.
Okay.
An extension cord between the two. And it is unplugged.
Oh, I love that. That helps me.
It,
I can picture that.
It's saying that there has been damage to the connection so that your tongue doesn't move properly, the muscles. But
oh, that's
also
what's going
it just
on. Okay.
Doesn't, it just doesn't connect. You can think of the board a lot of times, but you do not know how to pronounce it.
Mm. Interesting. Mm. So, and
you had 2 points. I just want to make sure. Did you have one more that you wanted to make?
Those are
the 2 points. Okay.
Those were the two points. I think it's very good to give people analogies.
Right.
To think
very
of
good.
Things simply.
Right. And what I would say to that
helps
Jeff,
me a lot.
is that
I like it simple.
Yeah. I would say that was part of the point I was trying to make with the dementia, and that's why it's really very rewarding to work with people with aphasia, because much of the brain is working very well. And the important point is to emphasize to people that they have all these strengths. So in our mm-hmm. clinic, we show people a picture of the brain, and we kind of draw on it. This is where your problem is. But look, all of these other areas are still functioning very, very well. So you can have people who can't speak at all, but they can, you know, make cakes and drive and cook and they recognize their families and can live very, very well. It's one of the things,
I guess because we've had others on about mm-hmm. With talk about dementia, but we've never connected that there could be a connection with them being able to aphasia with
separate
because aphasia is not dementia.
Right.
I mean, they can have dementia with aphasia. I mean,
this is where it gets confusing.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's where I want to know.
Every time I try to say something medical, I'm just messing it up. I should just turn the
whole
tiny just like
I want to know.
Hey, Dr. Rochester,
a good question, but I think one of the things confusing to people, and I see people in the clinic all the time,
trip over the words that, like I'm doing with the microphone.
Well, I think people, you need to focus on, the brain is a big thing with a lot of different areas. So dementia is not specific.
Because it's an umbrella term.
It's just that, that something's just going on with the brain,
brain
might be deteriorating in some area. But what if you're just deteriorating, say, in your vision center? Mm. Do you're going to call that dementia? Sometimes people call certain kinds of areas of the brain where it's degenerating dementia. But you have to remember that there's a clinical level, symptom level. Like, let's say you were in an accident and you broke your right arm. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't say, oh, you have broken bones. You would say, "My right, your right arm is broken." It matters to you that it's your right arm and not your left toe.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So in the brain, there's so many different areas. If you just say you have broken bones or you have a broken brain, it's not very specific. It's not all one thing. It's not like we lose our brain 80%, 60%, 50%, 20%. It can be just one
area.
And one
of
the things that's important about understanding, I think it's really key with aphasia, it really opens up people's understanding of the brain and how you can have an area that's affected but not have the other areas affected, not only in stroke. Like you were saying, Jeff, that it doesn't affect intelligence. So it doesn't affect a lot of other things. But there are other people who I see in my clinic that just have visual spatial problems, and I don't know if they'd be listening, but they have trouble figuring out how to put their clothes on or how to find things in front of them in space. They don't have a language problem. They don't have a memory problem. And they're very intelligent, if you want to put it that way. So the brain can be affected in very like localized ways.
Yes.
And the language way is a nice example of how you can have this one thing. And too often, people confuse speech with intelligence.
I know.
And you can think about this. This is what I tell my patients too, or families, is that when you're a kid, you don't always know all the words for things, but you're very intelligent. You know what's going on. People can use words, but you know who your parents are. You know what you think. You may not always have the words. Or if you've been in a different country that speaks a different language, you know everything that's going on. Speech and language is a kind of important way that our concepts, our thoughts, are connected into these programs that allow us to give those thoughts to somebody else. But there are other ways we communicate too.
Sure. All right. And I know, speaking of communicating, Jeff's waving his hand at me.
Yes, go.
Yes, Jeff. You can tell we go back for years. I'm like, Jeff.
I think I want to share a little more about my stroke.
I was going to ask you to. Thank you.
And my stroke destroyed a quarter of my brain, basically on the right side.
Wow.
So the effects, besides my aphasia, my left side is partially paralyzed. So I cannot use my right arm, my left arm, at all, really. It's there. But the other thing is, I do not know where that side of my body is in space.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You lose the sensors. And that, I always forget the name of those, the
proprioception.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh,
yes,
that's a big word. You were touching
my
your left arm just now.
Right there.
That was very good.
Okay, what was that word again? Okay. But you were just touching your left arm. Does that mean you don't feel that?
It's very interesting. In some other strokes, patients that I've talked to, on my left side, it's very strange. The pain I feel is 5 times worse than I did before my stroke. A mosquito bite hurts me.
On your left side?
On the light of the effect. I like to say my affected side.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
But my point about intelligence, I lost 25% of my brain, but I'm here today talking, and you name a subject, I'll talk to you about it.
Right.
You know, I'm still here, but I think people need to know that a stroke changes your your life. But if you work hard, when I had my stroke, I could not speak one word. Mm-hmm. I could never read at all. In fact, right after my stroke, I could not swallow. They had to, that was the scariest thing when I woke up from my stroke. I could not swallow.
I can't imagine.
And then I could not eat. So they had to give me a stomach tube. Mm-hmm. I lost 20 pounds in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the points you're making, which I think is critical, is for people to know that when they have a stroke, not to lose hope, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing if you come in and you're having a change in your language from a not a stroke, mm-hmm. from like we call it progressive aphasia. People do very, very well with aphasia, and they can recover from strokes. I had a really wonderful woman come in who was going to get a little early dementia, but it really affected her language area specifically. And we talked a lot about how you can have an aphasia and have a good life and understand everything that's going on and recognize your family and make choices and have good judgments. And it doesn't take away, like you put it, your intelligence or, which may be even more important, your social emotional self mm-hmm. necessarily. Mm-hmm. And your values and things like that. So these perspectives on if you're given a diagnosis, so for that woman, it was really helpful for her to understand that because she was trying to make decisions about her future and whether she had hope. Mm-hmm. And I think when people get strokes, they can start to become depressed. It's good to know that, like again, the brain is not one big glob. It has little pieces and there are different parts of it. And you want to know what kind of problems you have mm-hmm. and how you can recover from those things. And language in particular, people sometimes think is so critical. In fact, in my opinion, I'm not alone in this, but in my opinion, it's much worse to lose that social emotional part of your brain processing centers than the language part.
So this is so helpful. And I was thinking about this a lot last night as I was prepping for being with both of you. And Jeff and I have been emailing about today. And what's amazing, and being a colleague of Jeff, and clearly I know the intelligence is strong. We serve together on a board. It was great for me to challenge any of my perceptions and biases, because Jeff and I met in a very professional setting and worked together in his volunteer and capacity, both of us as volunteers with the county. And so I saw, and it was, you're my first friend that's had aphasia. And one of the things you emailed to me, and one of the reasons why you asked to come on the show as we were planning, is that you wanted to show that there are possibilities, I'm reading this, of a good life after a stroke. And I can't thank you enough for this, because I'm probably not alone. It's one of my biggest fears is to have a stroke. And clearly, I'm such a big talker. And mm-hmm. so to have a stroke and then have aphasia, really, I know Alicia's like, clearly, understatement.
That's what I do.
Understatement.
Well,
that's what both of us.
We talk for a living. But
and so, yeah, you do give me that hope. And I think that's probably, tell us about, Jeff, I know you volunteer a lot with the Triangle Aphasia Project. Is that one of the reasons why you're so active, is to be, you're literally the poster, you're a poster boy. you're the poster child for great
I really
great
do want to give out a shout out to TAP, mm-hmm. the Aphasia Triangle Aphasia Project. Mm-hmm. And I have been with them for 5 years of my 7 after my stroke. I was very fortunate to have a good speech therapist from the beginning, but then with TAP, I learned to read again. Wow. I could not talk like this when I went there. The critical thing with a stroke is to get great physical therapists. I had mm-hmm. a great therapist taught me to walk. I usually walk 3 miles a day by myself. Wow. I have a cane, but I've learned a trick. I wear a lot of hats, so people don't look at my cane. They look at my hats.
Okay. Diversions.
I actually want to talk about, I want to go back to therapy in just a moment, because I'd like to, so Alicia has a question. I want to go back to therapies, but I'm glad you mentioned the hat. Mm-hmm. You taught me something about the hat. So you have a few reasons for wearing a hat, which I think is brilliant. Why else do you wear it? I'm totally just throwing you this question. Why else do you wear a hat, Jeff? It's fascinating.
Well, from a medical standpoint, I really should write a paper as a professional. I actually find that my stroke brain works better when it's warm. And my thought is the brain is not using energy to keep it warm. That energy, metabolic energy, is being rebuilding the neuron connection. Mm-hmm. I would like to ask the doctor to talk about neuroplasticity.
Oh, yes. Thank you. That was another word. All right, Alicia, I know we'll get to your question.
With the hat, so keeping the head warm, does that make any difference or no?
I've not really heard that. There are people who have certain kinds of conditions where actually being hot makes them worse with their neural function. Like multiple sclerosis, for example, if they're thinking about cognition, they want to be cooler, to optimize their thinking. So I think that's individual, really. But I mean, it is true, there are many things we can do to support brain health. And, you know, you were talking about walking. It's so important that we stay physically active, and almost across the board, that is shown to reduce stroke risk, reduce dementia risk.
Can you say that one more time about the importance of being physically
active? Yeah, Dr. Roth doesn't know what she just walked in.
Can you just emphasize that a little more?
Physical activity, and then the diet things have come up too.
I know. All right,
but,
so first,
you know, those things
are important.
But now that's not only important when you've had a stroke, it's before you had a stroke, and also with dementia.
Prevention.
With dementia. People might not think of dementia in the same context of stroke, but I think it's really important to think of both of those as affecting parts of the brain. Yeah, because they can really affect certain parts of the brain. And I work so much with people who have very early changes, who are very active participants in their community, and they're being diagnosed with, say, Alzheimer's disease, but they do not have Alzheimer's dementia. They are walking, talking, having great lives, making dinners, having people over.
So the brain, the scans are showing.
Yeah, you can show that people have this disease but they may just have one area of their brain that's affected. And now we're trying to do early interventions. Mm-hmm. Everybody's concerned about what can we do to keep the brain healthy, not only for stroke, but also for dementia. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that we talk about are exercise, diet. Another one is sleep, which I'm very involved in.
Talking about all three.
We're so going to have another show.
Those three are very big. And I guess the fourth, you know, I run this aging brain clinic.
Yes.
And aging brain clinic, what we try to do is explain how you can be proactive. Mm-hmm. And no matter what you have, you can try to do interventions or increase your brain health. Right? So it's a focus on making sure you know those things that you can do to make things better, and also get medical advice on how to change things to also support brain health. And one of the medical things that you can look at is polypharmacy, the drugs that can make things worse. Yeah. So when you have a brain injury, whether it be from a stroke or maybe it's from an early changing cognitive dementia process, but it's not full-on dementia, medicines have more of a powerful effect, right? And somebody could take that medicine when they're 50 and do really well. But if you have aphasia from a stroke, or if you've had a tiny change in your cognition from the early dementia, it can just push you over the edge. So changing those things can have huge impacts on people's ability to function, quality of life.
So
things like that.
Worse.
There's a lot that you can do so those are things you intervene with for brain health. But also the really important thing is keeping, and this is maybe for your audience, if any of you all you know, have people you know who have this or yourself, is keeping in mind that whatever you have other things that are strong, mm-hmm. and you can work with those things to make things better. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not only do you have other parts of your brain, but you also have other resources at your disposal, like fixing your sleep, making sure you're not on the right medications, the right medications, getting exercise, like Jeff talks about,
okay.
making sure you're doing, they call it a heritage diet or a mind diet or Mediterranean diet.
Ooh,
doesn't
like
have
that.
To be.
Hold on. We got to write that down. There's always a part of the show, and Alicia, I've been doing
it. I'm
going
to talk about that on my show.
But it's not.
You
it's
know what
not,
the heritage diet is?
I'm gonna find out.
But it's
all
basically going back to more basic
food.
It's like grain, like grains, and you know, and vegetables and fruits and berries and not as much processed foods,
yeah.
right?
Right?
Olive oil, not so much the butter and the. They talk.
Like
so it's
interesting.
So anyway, fruits, vegetables. Since I'm here, I'm kind of trying to throw this out at you guys.
No, that's we want
I'm going to be talking about this when you leave on my show.
Or you can stay.
Okay, yeah.
Actually, she can stay and have to talk with Alicia. I did want to say, if you wondered why we sort of raised our voices and got intense, for our longtime listeners, it's an ongoing back and forth between super active
versus
Alicia versus super sedentary Heather.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where she was like, oh, so walking and that. And then I was looking.
Reemphasize.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that was that.
We know none of us are perfect,
right?
But I think, and we're all different.
Yes,
I think that you know, it's good to know these things so you can get them into your lifestyle.
Yes, and some of us being me know better. And when I look at the stroke warning things, I'm sort of high up on not doing the things I should.
Sleeping, another one we could talk about another time.
Oh, we're so having a show.
But we can focus on the main thing about aphasia, I guess, to keep in mind, and I think I've said it 100 times now, but it's really, people do really well with aphasia is an isolated problem. Mm-hmm. They can recover really well, and I think there's a prejudice, use that term, or a bias about people with when you lose language disorders. And this does not, it's not just today. This actually goes back to the 19th century, because I've done a little history things.
Ooh, tell us.
And people felt that language was associated with intelligence, right?
Yes.
And so they were very opposed to finding that the brain had a part of it that was responsible for language, because they wanted intelligence to be sort of more of a spiritual thing. But really, there are some mechanic parts of our brain, and language is separate, you know, from that. So it was a big controversy when people started studying it in the very, very beginning, the 1860s.
And they found out,
they figured it was one of the first places they found in the brain that that was localized to a certain function was language. And there was a lot of controversy about that. Did that mean people weren't intelligent? And what they showed, Broca, very common aphasia that people talk about, Broca, Paul Broca.
Oh, it's a person.
It's a person who lived in the 1860s, was in France, and he described this patient he had who had very few words, maybe just 4 words.
Okay.
And they called him Tan because Tan was one of the words that he had. But he could express himself emotionally with these 4 words that he had. He could point to things to say what he meant. And the point was that his intelligence was still intact, even though he had few words. But even today, even amongst neurologists, even amongst medical people, people will say, well, if I had a stroke, maybe I would rather have a right-sided, you know, a stroke that was not going to affect my language. And I will tell you, anybody who works in the speech and language area would say, I would much rather have a language stroke because it won't affect all those other things that are more important. Language is really in the service of our intelligence in a certain way, if you want to think about it that way. So and I think that TAP, Maura Silverman is the woman
TAP, the Triangle
who leads
Aphasia
the
Project.
Triangle Aphasia Project. One of her messages is really to empower people who have aphasia to understand that they have you know, lots of abilities that, you know, other people might not see. And that language disorder is something you work on, but you can adapt to a very full and effective life in the setting of having an aphasia.
Well, and I want to talk about that, and I know we've got about 10 minutes left. Yeah. First of all, a few things. I want to do a PSA, public service announcement. The Triangle Aphasia Project, we've mentioned it a few times, and for folks that are interested in learning more, the website is, this is where you get your pens and paper and pens and paper. It is www.aphasiaproject.org. It's all just one word, aphasiaproject.org, and that will take you to the website. We started, I want to get back to the like really sexy sounding word, neuroplasticity. I love that term. I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about the therapies. Jeff, you've alluded to it a few different times about the different therapies that really helped you. And for our listeners and our loyal podcast reviewers, one of our earliest shows, we had a speech therapist and a music therapist that talked about their work with aphasia. And so let's take it from that super fun sounding word that Jeff was emailing me. I'm like, ooh, I love the sound of neuroplasticity, what that means, and then all the different therapeutic team members that helped you become as fabulous as you are today.
The brain is amazing in its ability to repair itself, and that is neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't talked about, but I had a stroke at birth that nobody knew about. And it ended up, I found out about it when I was 40. They found this big hole in my brain, of destroyed brain. And it was in the area of the neurologist at the time said, well, Jeff, that would have been your speech center. And as a baby, I didn't swallow properly. I threw up a lot. I delayed in speaking, delayed in walking. Nobody knew this. So I was my own therapist from the beginning. So I truly am a self-made man.
Yes, tell us, doctor, because you have a very, both of you have a pretty impressive background. We jumped right over that. We didn't do our introductions. Jeff, tell us about how I love how you say you proved your teachers wrong.
That's right.
What was your professional journey academic?
I had no, this is all, realizing all of this, Jeff, you developed workarounds as a sixth grader. And I was a klutz. That's why I was never picked for teams. But it gave me an appreciation about that stroke at birth. I also like, I'm a jokester. I make a lot of jokes. Mm-hmm. I have these workarounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was my PhD in human physiology. I am my own experiment every day of my life.
Is that why you went in? Well, first of all, quick question. Did they diagnose you at 40? Is that when, that's not what, you hadn't had your second stroke yet.
That's correct.
So that was amazing that they saw it, and then, because that part of your story is fascinating.
And they could tell that there was scar tissue around a vein in my brain. So when I was a baby, I was used a forceps pulled out of my mother, and it broke a vessel that destroyed about 5% of my brain. And it caused my speech center. This is the neuroplasticity of the brain. It destroyed the area that normally becomes the speech center in a baby. My brain said, ain't going to work here. I'm going to go elsewhere. And it did.
And it really did, because normally the speech is on the left, and yet with you, they were able to tell that it was developed on the right. So is this why you went in and got your doctoral degree in human physiology? Because of what was going, okay, all right.
No, not at all. I didn't know I had a stroke my whole life. It was only after the bottom line, I did this. I actually was a toxicologist in my career.
We're going to have all these. Well, I knew you hadn't had your stroke yet, but I was wondering if, because you're I don't, what encouraged you to go into human physiology? Was it that you saw some other changes in your own body and are like, I'm going to start researching, or are you just fascinated with, I don't know?
I was really wanted to learn about organ systems, which was my human physiology. And I learned a lot about neurology in my schooling, which now has helped me a lot. You know, life is funny that way. Also, recovery actually is attitude. Mm-hmm. If you keep a positive attitude, you break a leg, you have a stroke,
it helps.
Whatever.
Yeah, it helps. I would say I always like to caution people because people can have depression and it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's important to have support. And, you know what you can do and get good reframing about what you can do, but not feel pressure, but know that you can have hope.
Well, and
always,
I think it...
Always set goals that are achievement. Mm-hmm. Don't make them too large. For me, when I was learning to walk, my first goal was 100 steps. And I built up to 3 miles over a year and a half.
And you can always improve. There's some people will say you're going to only get
plateau
3 months and you're going to plateau. But there's all the brain is plastic. And when you're really young, it's very plastic. But we're learning all and more and more how much the brain can change. So there's always things you can try to do. You know, some people have strokes that are more difficult to recover from. But with language strokes, I mean, I think it's important to kind of get beyond the misconception that that's a devastating type of stroke.
Which I hope our listeners get that, because that has been so big for me, is getting, because I've had my own fears and misconceptions, and just in the past 24 hours getting past that. Dr. Roth, when you mentioned depression, and it broadened what was going on in my mind about that team. So we had talked about the team when you do have a stroke, and if aphasia or other issues that come with it. So we've mentioned today, just for the shout outs, physical therapy, speech therapy, I know music therapy, but you did make me think a key member of the team, well, besides your neurologist, your physicians, nurses, everyone else, is a mental health specialist, and to also kind of combine that acknowledgement of the psychological impact, or you tell me who's
right
on the team. I was just making a list of all the therapies that would be key here.
Yeah. I think the key in the cognitive neurology kind of is the speech therapist is really, really critical for the speech part of things, because they have that perspective on how people can get better. I think these groups like the Triangle Aphasia Project or... Mm-hmm. And I think you have to have somebody, I mean, I'm biased towards neurology.
Well, clearly.
But you can have neuro rehab specialists also. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I don't make these distinctions between stroke lesions and brain lesions. Like you hear about Bruce Willis has primary progressive aphasia.
Yes.
Or you have Gabby Giffords who had
Gabby Giffords.
Yes. Right.
I was going to bring her
right
up because she talks about
these
music
people,
therapy. And
yeah. And there are different ways to do therapy. But I think there's also the medical side. Like, are you treating your diabetes right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting somebody giving you Ambien for sleep? That would not be good for your brain. And then mood, right? So it's hard to have 10 specialists though. So I think there's sort of a need there for someone to be able to kind of coordinate that.
Oh, yeah.
And I
when
don't know if that would be the rehab.
My dad was in the ICU. He had 13 specialists at one point. So I guess it's finding the right therapist, the right team members for the right time. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a medical system
pathway. I did something.
Pathway.
She had that diplomatic
There's a medical pathway where people say you need to see a speech therapist, you need to see a physical therapist,
sure,
and you need to follow up with a physician. So that would be sort of the basics, right?
Yes.
And you hope that the physician would notice if there's a mood issue to then be sure that gets addressed. And it doesn't necessarily need a psychiatrist.
No, it doesn't.
Therapist or something like that. But I think in this day and age, people advocate for themselves a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And just getting that knowledge that if you do have problems with, you know, your anxiety or you're worrying more or you're tearful, those are things that can be treated that can help your, you know, help your stroke okay. recovery or your cognitive impairment mm-hmm. in the setting of an early, what we call mild cognitive impairment.
Mm-hmm. All right. So yeah. we have 2 minutes left. Hmm. Well, actually, a minute left, but I'll make it two. let's just say two. We have 2 minutes left. And so I want to make sure in your 2 minutes, if there's anything that you wanted to share, I'm looking at Jeff, that you haven't had a chance to share yet. And that, and my other question was going to be, you know, what gives you hope for the future? So, Jeff, I'll let you take it away, and then if we have more time.
I would like to control my participation with one of my favorite jokes.
Okay, go for it.
For me to be sitting here, I had to be fortunate to have all kind of therapists and everything. For me to sit here... Insurance paid $500,000, and I have a deep need to prove to society that I was worth the investment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, that's good. I don't know if that's a joke, and you've emailed that, and I was going to bring it up. I'm so glad you did, and I've thought about that with own family members about a tremendous societal investment. And but that's so much pressure you've put on yourself, Jeff. And I also wanted to do a quick call out, which is, Jeff, you're not alone. And I think for so many people, I mean, literally, you're not alone in the studio besides me and Alicia and Dr. Roth. Who's right behind you? Because I think there's a beautiful person that needs a call out.
Yes, my gorgeous wife of 55 years, my caregiver.
Yeah.
I would not be here. Without her, she got me to the hospital quickly after my stroke and has been with me every second of this journey.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And yes, Linda, we'll have another show with more mics and we'll have you come and join us.
No, that's quite fun.
Are you fine being in the background?
Fine
but
being back here.
I think as I look around this room, I think it's important to acknowledge you need your medical supports, you need your social supports.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Roth, I'll let you have a quick few moments with last words about sharing things or what gives you hope for the future.
Well, I think that there's a lot more emphasis on brain health, mm-hmm. even in the last 5 years, just as we've learned so much more. Our medications have gotten better. And, you know, in Alzheimer's disease now we have a medication that's looking like it can alter amyloid. So mm-hmm. I think I'm hopeful that people are starting to pay more attention to both stroke health and dementia health. That mm-hmm. That's hopeful to me. But with regard to insurance, I wanted to say one thing. It's complicated with insurance, and I want people to know not to stop themselves from going to the doctor because of insurance issues.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things are so important that if you have these types of symptoms, you need to go to the hospital and not think about money.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important.
It's hard.
So,
and a lot of people do.
I know.
Well, with that, I do need to end the show. I can't believe it, but we will have you both back on, and we're going to have a whole show on sleep. I'm warning you now, Dr. Roth. Really, Dr. Heidi Roth from UNC Neurology, Dr. Jeff Charles, who's part of the Orange County Advisory Board on Aging, as well as the Triangle Aphasia Project, and all kinds of other fantastic that came out funny. Fantastic volunteer activities for others in the community. As always, we give a shout out to WCOM FM Chapel Hill Carborough, LP Chapel Hill Carborough for letting us host our fabulous Aging Well Together show, and to our friends at Orange County Department on Aging. And to all of you, pay attention to your body. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening to your show, but most importantly, I think your takeaway today is listen to your body. And with that, we'll talk to you next week.